Welcome to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast, where we ask today's most successful experts and entrepreneurs to share the most powerful lead generation and appointment setting tactics they use to build their business and grow their revenues. Now your host from the city that never sleeps, New York, is Kwesi Sachijinai.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for joining the conversation today. This is Kwesi Sachijinai. My guest today is Nihal Madani. Nihal is an attorney and the founder and CEO of Alt Legal, a software company that helps legal professionals to build and manage hundreds and thousands of filings, IP filings, deadlines daily. Nihal was a practicing attorney at the internationally renowned law firm Kirkland & Ellis. He was then inspired to make legal practice more efficient, so he taught himself how to program, and that's how come he founded Alt Legal. Nihal has been speaking very often about the intersection of legal practice and technology at bar associations and conferences, and this includes the New York County Lawyers Association, the New York State Bar Association, the Bar Association of San Francisco, the Florida Bar, and so many others. He's also been profiled in Inc. magazine, Bloomberg. He's had some publications in Above the Law, Attorney at Work, Huffington Post, and the Journal of Management and Information System. So first of all, Nihal, I must say congratulations, because I just mentioned before we started recording that you've been very huge on diversity, your company. More than half of your team members are women, a third of them are immigrants, and you have a really wide diversity in terms of, you know, people from Ivy League schools and people with no college degrees. So congratulations on that. Really fascinating.
Thank you. It's something that we've been actively striving for. Figured the best set of opinions is the most diverse set of opinions.
Right. I think it's so critical, especially in this morals, I guess, of the U.S. But I'm going to skip that. But I'm really excited about this conversation, because we're not going to talk about law, but I've been really fascinated about some of the profound ways that you have gotten people together in groups and meetups in a way that really accomplishes something important. And obviously, that's a way that adds value to your network and helps you to grow your business. And I want us to focus on that in this conversation. But before we do that, I want you to take us, you know, a couple of steps back, right? Before you created your first group or you started the first group, you've started a couple of meetups, including Plain Talk. Now it's called Legal Talk for Entrepreneurs, the Django Coding Club, and so on. Where were you at with your business before you started meetups, and why did you start?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I guess, you know, the history of these meetups is that they were all sort of born from some sort of business need. And when I first started, so I was at a law firm, as you mentioned before, and then I left and wanted to start a legal technology company, but it was just me and I didn't know any technical co-founders, really. I didn't have a co-founder, so I needed to learn how to code. So I just started going through online tutorials and trying to teach myself how to program in a framework called Django in a language called Python. And so as I was doing that, I was often hitting stumbling blocks because I couldn't debug, or even when I could build something, my next question was, am I building it with best practices in mind? And so what I ended up trying to do is get groups of programmers together so that we could all learn and teach from each other. And, you know, if we were struggling with a problem, if we didn't know if there was a package that we could use to make this much more efficient, or so that we didn't have to code this up from scratch, there really wasn't a resource for that. And so what I did is I went on Meetup and created this group called Django Coding Club. Didn't really have a more creative name, but it was very descriptive. And it really was born out of necessity, because I didn't know folks in the technical community. I didn't have any co-founders, and I was really struggling with often sometimes programming concepts that I felt like someone with even 6 months more of experience could solve for me or guide me in the right direction. And so formed that meetup, and it was really simple. We would get together once a week at a co-working space in Chinatown called Projective Space, and we would just sit there and code next to each other or ask each other questions and really just get to build a community of developers. And so that's how I started that. And that ultimately actually led to Django NYC. And it was a group that was already existing, but we ended up, helping organize it going forward. So Django Coding Club, I think, grew to about 150 members and then ultimately became part of Django NYC, which is now close to 3,000 members.
Close to 3,000 members? You still meet?
3,000. So still meet. I'm not as active as I used to be, as I would like to be, but certainly in a couple years ago, the group was very active. And the group, I think, is still going. I just am less involved these days. So just checked, it's actually 2,862 members.
Wow, fascinating. And I know it was born out of necessity, just like you mentioned. I'm curious to know, when you started, what impact did you see on your in your journey to, you know, becoming a good programmer or a good coder, and ultimately how it impacted your business going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So from that, certainly learned best practices. I learned sort of other packages I could use. I was able to solve bugs that probably would have taken me countless hours to solve with just, you know, sitting next to an expert. And so the nice thing about the group was that it brought in people of varying skill sets and experiences. So that was the most immediate impact, is, you know, helping me solve these things and just improving my coding skills, because I could learn best practices. Or I could discover books that I just never had heard of because someone had read them. But out of that, I was also able to find team members along the way. And so some of the team members that have helped us, the company's now been around for about 5 years, but some of the team members that have helped us along the way were actually people that I met in Django Coding Club or in Django NYC.
So how did that happen? Were they also working on their own project? And you guys met and you thought, hey, it might be good. How did that dynamic evolve?
Yeah, so they were certainly working on their own projects along the way, but you know, as I needed to say, for example, if I needed a consultant for a specific project, I'd go to the people that I met in that group because I had the chance to work alongside them. I knew what they were capable of. I knew how they could specifically help, right? And so if you're, it's sort of in many ways skipping past the interview process because I've worked alongside them in an informal setting.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you meet them in groups, you build a trust, you build a relationship. And I want you to speak to that a little bit, because a lot of the meetup groups these days are kind of a shove your business card and, you know, walk away. How important is it to nurture relationship in meetups and groups before you, you know, become a person credible enough in that network?
I mean, I think if you can keep doing that the whole way through, that credibility itself will, of course, eventually lead to some more business. So if you can just shy away from pitching businesses generally during, or your business specifically during these meetups, I think that's probably the most powerful method. A lot of people that I met in Django Coding Club when we started are ones I still keep in touch with, and they've helped us solve problems along the way.
Fascinating. So you started Django Coding Club, and you also started another group for lawyers, right?
That's right.
Or attorneys.
Well, actually two other groups. So after Django Coding Club, I had built a marketplace connecting lawyers and businesses. And so the goal was to have a network of vetted lawyers on one side and a group of businesses that could benefit from their legal help on the other side. So a two-sided marketplace. But that's a really tough business for customer acquisition, right? You need to find people that, you need to find entrepreneurs or businesses that need legal help at that exact moment when they're going to come across your website. And so what I ended up doing is I created a group called Plain Talk and now Legal Talk for Entrepreneurs. And the idea behind that was I had this great network of attorneys that had expertise in specific areas, and I wanted to help them find clients that needed that exact subject matter expertise. And at that time, so what we did is create a group that would just invite lawyers to speak on something that they already knew about. So they got a chance to speak in front of business owners and entrepreneurs. And on the other end, we'd spread the word about this event where entrepreneurs could essentially get some level of free legal advice or free legal guidance, and attorneys demonstrating their credibility. And that was really one of the key ways that we built up demand for our legal marketplace at the time.
Wow, this is awesome. Well, I can imagine that you had a lot of intentionality in choosing the right people to come and talk. But from the attendees' point of view, how did you ensure that, you know, the people who walk in really have a need for X, Y, or Z type of legal practice or service?
I mean, it was in many ways self-selecting because, mm-hmm. you know, you don't really attend a talk on, you know, H-1B visas at 7 o'clock on a Thursday night unless you really want to know about that. So there was some level of curation just by the nature of the topics that we presented. But ultimately, we also ended up charging a small amount. I think it was just $5 for the meetup. And so that mm-hmm. that way, it wasn't just folks RSVPing at will. It was people that had at least made some sort of financial commitment to attend.
Gotcha. And I know it's been 5 years, 4 years since you started, and a lot has changed in terms of connections and meeting people, especially in-person meetings. I can believe that with the advent of social media and, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, a lot of the ways that people connect have become very different. So if you had to start or if you have to start the meetup all over again, and I'm asking this because a lot of people who are also thinking about starting groups or masterminds or a lot of different business-related communities that would impact positively their businesses. What are some of the things you would do differently if you had to start all over again?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, one of the other things that you realize along the way is that meetups are communities. And as a result, building any kind of community takes a lot of effort, but also concentrated effort, right? So you need to make sure that you have the time and ability to nurture it and to grow mm-hmm. it. And really, it's kind of like, you know, writing for a blog, right? You just need to make sure that you've set aside time every week or every month to do something for that community so that you do build that audience and you do continuously get out there.
How much time are we looking at?
Depends on how active you want the group to be, right? So Django Coding Club was weekly. And so I would say mm-hmm. weekly, you have those 3 to 4 hour meetups that we would have. And then in addition, probably an hour or two for planning every week. So yeah, I guess that's depending on how active you want the group to be. New York Lawyers is another meetup that I run. And we used to try and do monthly meetups. That was just too time consuming. So now we do quarterly. And to do a quarterly meetup and, you know, find a venue, get invitations out, make sure it's well attended, we probably put in about 5 to 10 hours of effort.
So when you have the option of choosing quarterly meetups versus monthly meetups, you would probably go for quarterly.
Depends on the group. And, you know, for these days, just given our other commitments, we do go for mm-hmm. quarterly. And if you have a large enough group, you can certainly do weekly. So, for example, with Django NYC, a lot of times they will just do hack nights, and they'll do those hack nights. At some point, we were doing them weekly. Now, I think it's become monthly. And then we do speaking engagements usually quarterly. So you can spread mm-hmm. it out, and you can do different levels of commitments for different members of the group to address folks that want to be really active and ones that, you know, just want to come out for the bigger events.
Gotcha. And so, yeah, the frequency of the event is one thing you would consider. Is there any other thing that you would?
Yeah, I think generally, going back, if you can get a co-organizer, you know, especially mm-hmm. 2 or 3, that will certainly help spread out the burden and make sure that, you know, if one person gets busy, there's resources that can go around to keep the group active. All and right. so certainly find a team when you start this. Figure out the frequency and then really just find other ways to nurture it both online and offline. So one other group that I've started attending is around legal tech recently. And what they've done is really interesting. He certainly organizes events in person, but he's also now created a Slack group as well so that you can create a community both online and offline.
Yeah. I've belonged to a couple of groups as well that they have a Google, how do you say the Google groups? Right. So they communicate online and yeah. Does it take away from, and I'm asking you because you've been heavily involved in in-person meetings, does it take away from the personal relationships and the connection that you would make in person?
I don't think it does. I think oftentimes the relationships are in fact built, the online relationships are built on those offline connections. And so when you meet someone in person and then you can go back and say, oh, you know what, actually, take Django Coding Club. I have a question on this.
Mm-hmm.
you can, rather than wait for the next encounter, right, you could just directly ping them. And so I think it builds a more of a continuous relationship as opposed to one that's a little bit more sporadic.
Right. Did you have a cadence or a process or a system that you used when you used to actively run meetups to follow up with the relationships offline?
Yeah, certainly. The best is if you can create some sort of template, right, based on it beforehand. And the second is just having some sort of CRM or process for organizing, right? Like any kind of contact you derive anywhere to have something that will allow you to set that up with ease would be great, right? So if you can create a CRM that has a list of everyone that you've ever met at this meetup, I think that certainly helps quite a bit. So any level of efficiency that you can introduce and something that would allow you to have those prompt follow-ups right after that meeting is usually really helpful for building and nurturing those relationships.
This is really fascinating. And I know that I talked to a lot of different entrepreneurs, and constantly the traction channels are, you know, evolving, and people are looking for ways to attract high value conversations and high value clients. And I know that meetups or masterminds or groups are a really great way to do that. So how would you encourage someone who is thinking about starting their own, you know, meetup? What are some of the things you would encourage them to think very deeply about?
Yeah, aside from sort of those, you know, the infrastructure type elements I mentioned before, you know, the other set of items I really think about is why, right? So why are you doing it? Because it's going to take time, it's going to take effort, right? And to have a clear goal, a clear objective is certainly part of it. And then the second is, even once you identify that clear goal and clear objective, what type of community do you really want to build, right? How large do you want the community to be? How exclusive do you want the community to be? So for example, with New York lawyers, we generally limit the group to attorneys. And that's created a different kind of community, and one that we get a regular attendance from attorneys, because they're not being pitched anything. They're not being sold anything. So thinking through what resources you're going to need and what resources you'll have, the goals of the meetup, and then third is what kind of community you want to build, right? Is it open? Is it exclusive? Is it narrow? How niche is it going to be?
Right. And this is so good. I want us to unpack on the why for you know, a couple of minutes here. So if you have a product, should the meetup be, and I just want to pick your brain on that, should it be related to your product or a target that you're looking, you know, to connect with or to do business with? What's the right way to craft your why is my question.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think any meetup that's like too narrowly targeted to a product doesn't really have, I think, big enough following, right? Unless the product is so widely used, right? So maybe like a Salesforce meetup, right? That might make sense because people constantly have questions around Salesforce or, you know, implementation of it. But for us, you know, for example, we sell IP docketing software. That means we sell software to help IP lawyers track all their filings and deadlines. We could create a meetup group of just IP lawyers, but we've taken a strategy that's a little bit broader and just say, you know, we're going to create a community of just New York lawyers. And this way, you know,
why that strategy?
So for us, it's, you know, IP lawyers are a niche community. And, you know, there's only going to be so much interest from the IP community to meet up on a regular basis in a meetup setting. And so we want to take a broader setting, and this way we could invite a lot of people and just build a community of lawyers generally. And some of those will happen to be IP lawyers, but they don't have to be, right? And for us, it's just to get to know the broader legal community. And even within, you know, New York lawyers, we could always create a specific event or a specific group for just trademark lawyers, right? Or just a community, just one event that's targeted at the IP community. But generally, for what we found is that, you know, getting people to come to an event, the broader you go and finding that balance between something that's too niche and too broad is key. This way you can get the right attendance as well.
Right. I'm going to put you on the spot, and this will be my final question because we're running out of time. So how do you encourage your colleague attorneys or lawyers to spend time in these meetups, because they really don't have a lot of time?
Right. And it's a good question. With attorneys, of course, there's even a quantifiable amount to how much that time could be worth.
Right.
And so for us, it's really been focusing on building a community, right? So we don't go in with any agenda. There, I think we've only held one sponsored event where they even purchased drinks. But otherwise, it's we get together at a bar or a venue where, you know, alcohol is going to be provided or people can purchase their own alcohol. There's no agenda. There's no sponsorships, no selling. The whole goal is to help attorneys get to know each other in an informal setting. And that sort of creating that sort of safety, I guess, so to speak, or safe zone where they can get together without fear of being sold or without them thinking that there's someone that's trying to get something very specific from them. That's helped us get regular attendance at meetup after meetup after meetup. And so preserving that community element and taking that to heart and making sure that is treated the right way has really helped us get attorneys out. And then the second is attorneys do tend to be a niche group, so that when we do invite one attorney, they will often bring a couple of their colleagues as well.
Gotcha. Word of mouth.
Exactly.
It's fascinating. Awesome, Nihal. So where can people learn more about your work, about you as a person, and the next projects you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, all of our time and all my energy is focused on a company called Alt Legal, which helps, as I mentioned, IP lawyers automatically create and track all of their IP filing deadlines. So for those that aren't IP lawyers, one of the most critical things that you have and you're responsible for when you're an IP lawyer is managing all of your filings. So it's not like when you file a trademark, you can just file it once and forget about it. You're going to have deadlines coming up on a regular basis, whether that's responding to a government objection or a third-party objection or just simply renewing a trademark. And if you miss one of these filings or deadlines, you could potentially lose that IP right. And for a lot of our customers, they're tasked with managing hundreds or even thousands of trademark filings, and our software just helps them automate that process. So we connect to government databases, we analyze the filing data, and we tell them what they have to do and exactly when they have to do it. So that's really been our focus and where we're going to be as a company for several years ahead.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Hal.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast with Kwesi Sachi-Jinai. Find out more about how to get high-value appointments at catalyze.io. And while you're there, check out the free resources for appointment setting. And be listening for the next episode of the Art of Appointment Setting podcast.